Welcome to the Terawatt Space Podcast. This is Aravind. In this podcast, I demystify Earth observation, satellite data, and all its applications. Quick housekeeping before we get to the episode. You know, this is the first episode after the break, after I officially launched my business, Terawatt Space. As I mentioned in the blog post, I'm going to be changing the format of the podcast a little. The startup of the month is one of those changes, where I'll have an interesting startup working in Earth observation on the podcast to give them a platform for highlighting what they're building. Today's episode with Blue Sky Analytics is the first of that series. If you'd like your startup to be on the podcast, I want to nominate one. Stay tuned for an announcement on social media. Now on to today's episode. The startup I want to highlight this month is Blue Sky Analytics, an Indian startup building climate intelligence solutions using satellite data for insurance and banking firms. I'm speaking with Abhilasha Purwar and Kshitij Purwar, the co-founders of Blue Sky, who also happen to be siblings. I wanted to have Blue Sky on the podcast because I think they have an interesting outlook in Earth observation, but more importantly, it's centered on impact, in this case, climate. In this episode, we discuss what Blue Sky Analytics is building, their API-first approach, their data-agnostic strategy, the business model, and whether EO companies are SaaS companies, the benefits of building the company in India, and more. And now I bring you Blue Sky Analytics. Abhilasha and Kshitij, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much, Arvind.
Cool. So the first question that I usually start with is to ask guests to describe their story. So I'm going to go one by one. Abhilasha, what's your story and how did you end up doing what you're doing now?
I've been very passionate or focused on climate since 2010. And I've been really looking at different ways to solve that climate problem from the perspective of technology, perspective of policy, financing, startups, everything. And in 2018, I decided to move back to India. Kshitij and I started brainstorming on our dining table. And somehow we really thought that unless you have a clear understanding of the problem around climate and like data, and a more consistent, high resolution, high frequency data, this problem wouldn't solve. If I take an example, I worked in some of the most polluted parts of India. I saw like orange rivers, like absolutely black plumes coming out of like chimneys, or you know, even in the US, like a lot of carbon emissions coming out from like different kinds of tailpipes. Till the time we don't measure them, till the time we don't measure things like deforestation and wildfires in a good resolution and in a consistent manner, I feel we're trying to solve something. It's like we don't even know the basic parameters around that, and that's where Blue Sky was born.
Interesting. Kshitij, what's your story?
I have a very typical random story. I am a college dropout and I'm a typical product guy, typical engineering tech person. And climate was not really on the top of my list, to be honest. And neither was finance. But Abhilasha, by the virtue of being my, having a sister like Abhilasha, I had exposure.
Yeah, sorry, we need to highlight that, right? Like your brother and sister.
Yeah. So I had exposure to these concepts, and she, I dropped out of college. I was doing freelancing in college, and I was building stuff back in 2014, and then I worked in Bangalore for about a year, and then Abhilasha introduced me, started telling me these stories around these ideas, how, you know, climate risk can lead to a financial recession or a financial meltdown. And I don't know, I don't have much background in economics or finance or climate, anything like that. I don't even really have an education, right? So, but these concepts really started to stick with me. I started to think about them. And then I started to think about them from a product and a tech perspective. And actually, that's how Blue Sky was born, that in our minds that that we need to have better understanding of the Earth that we live in so that we can make better financial decisions. And that's how I came in. And over the last 3-4 years that I've been working at Blue Sky, since we founded, I've learned a lot. And now I feel quite confident about her initial hypothesis about having this climate risk and financial, like how the environment data is so critical to financial world.
All right, so now let's hear about Blue Sky. So what's the elevator pitch for Blue Sky? Abhilasha, maybe you want to give us a overview for folks who have never heard of Blue Sky. How would you describe the company?
I'd actually go back to the same thesis, which is the impact of climate change on our economic systems. There's an economic system, there's a social system, and there's an environmental system, and all the other systems reside within the environmental system. When we look at 2008 financial crisis, which impacted the world in such a massive manner, but if you also look at some of the financial meltdowns of our, you know, economic system prior to that, especially going back to Great Depression, we can see that really incorrect measurements or estimations about some basic things. Like in 2008, it was the number of people who are going to default on a certain loan, on a certain home loan. And that estimation was lower than the reality. And that created a domino effect that, you know, in 8 months, one of the largest global banks was bankrupt. So we think about, this was such a small incidence of misestimation of sort of like a domino effect onto the, you know, in our society, in our economic systems. When we think of, you know, things like the temperature rise of 1.2 degree, 1.3 degree, the heat waves, the wildfires, the floods, the droughts, I think, more and more I've seen, been in this world of climate, I think people really underestimate, like we, you know, all three of us sitting, most people in the climate conferences, most people talking about all these aspects, really underestimate the kinds of risk and the kinds of dangers that are really lurking. And we haven't accounted for them at all in our economic systems. Like as of today, what's happening is a sort of market meltdown in terms of the startup world. Like a lot of valuations have really evaporated. A lot of like what you say would be the liquidity or the greed of the 2020s is coming to sort of like an end. But I think with climate change, it's going to be the energy addiction and the greed of the last 100 years, which will face a reckoning. And for the simplest elevator pitch is that we will have to turn around very quickly. And the best way to turn around is actually also numbers and technology. WhatsApp and Facebook have completely transformed the world in a matter of like very short span of time, right? Because it's like technology, essentially internet, Google. The information is available with everybody, and hence Kshitij can be a college dropout, a practically 12th pass person running a large company like Blue Sky Analytics. I feel that when we are able to provide the same environmental information to people across the world in all sorts of manner, like the goal at Blue Sky is to give some information in a freemium fashion to everyone, so that even, you know, somebody who is living, let's say, next to Amazon or in Brazil, they know how much exact deforestation happened in Amazon last year. If somebody who is in Northeast India or even in India right now, I have no clue how much area of Northeast India was inundated. Was it 100 kilometers square? Was it 1,000 kilometers square? Was it inundated for 7 days? Was it inundated for 2 days? It's a blank slate. We know nothing about anything related to our planet. And I think these numbers have to go to our banks when they take decisions about investments, and to the asset managers, to the insurances, to the journalists, and actually most important, to an average individual, just like Google Maps. Back in 2010, I went to Europe for the first time. There was no Google Maps. I used to get lost all the times. I want that in 10 years from today, you know, in 2032, people are like, wait a minute, how did we live without Blue Sky Analytics data? How did we live without space-time that we didn't even know what's the water quality of this lake or how much flooding is happening in like my region last year? So that's the goal at Blue Sky.
All right. So what are specifically your products? It seems like you have various types of environmental data to understand climate risks. So specifically, what are the types of your products?
So we focus majorly on the four physical risks which have been established by the TCFD framework. The first physical risk is wildfires, which is sort of connected. As you do wildfire monitoring, we're also getting a lot of information on air quality. We're also monitoring a lot of forest, all the carbon stock in the world. So that's like a big bucket of just monitoring carbon stock, wildfires, risks, air quality. The second large bucket is flooding and drought, which sort of includes like monitoring the water bodies, monitoring the soil moisture levels, just having a better understanding about our water resources. And the last bucket is actually extreme heat risk. And I think that's where a lot of innovation in terms of like satellite data really comes in, because heat is not just the temperature. People really mistake between climate and weather. weather is a snapshot of a place at this moment, and the like sort of, you know, predictions or some satellite modeling about it. Climate is what's going to happen next year, what's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years. And that I think is very critical. I think this year we reached 53 degrees Celsius temperature in a particular part of Iran. And that's a temperature at which the human sort of, you know, habitability really declines very quickly. And if we just start to think about it, what is the probability of that kind of temperature reaching other parts of the world, the number of such occurrences, the number of such hours, then we have to get this information down to people on an hourly basis so that they can take the adequate action to be safe and alive.
All right, makes sense. So I've heard you call your company as the Bloomberg Terminal for Environmental Data, or that's where you want to go to. Do you want to expand on, you know, what you mean by that?
I'll do a quick beginning and then Shadish can wrap it up, I think. You know, Bloomberg Terminal actually really transformed the financial markets, like back in the, you know, when they started. Just the information on the number of trades that were happening, what were the prices of different kinds of trades. So, you know, we think that a stock has a standard price, but that's not the reality. The stock's price is whatever price I am selling to you today and whatever price you're buying at today. And if both of us come at some price, then that's the price. More and more the transactions happen, more and more bids are made and received, the price is discovered. And pre-Bloomberg Terminal, this information was all with SEC, but all completely unstructured and hodgepodge. And you know, I think in the last 20 years, the financial markets have really changed in terms of like the transactions that they're able to take, the volume that's going to happen, simply because of that transparency. We feel that is going to happen similarly with Blue Sky Data for carbon markets, where there's going to be a huge transparency in terms of carbon stock measurements, in terms of the biodiversity and the quality of that particular carbon stock. Similar thing in terms of climate risk. Now, leaving on to Shitish, we don't think that in 2022, we need to make a terminal anymore, like Mike Bloomberg had to make back in the days. We are very bullish on APIs and that whole technology piece. So we think that the data can be received from satellites via cloud to us. We can do the refining and processing of that data, put them on really clean APIs, and which are structured by environmental and climate parameters. And then those APIs could go to the right kinds of customers and they could power them. And on to Shitish for elaborating more.
So, as Abhilasha said, like Bloomberg for Environmental Data, that's like the nickname that one of our early angel investors gave us. It was not actually, it didn't come internally. And it was like Abhilasha was pitching to this person that, you know, this is what we are building. And he's like, so you're building Bloomberg for Environmental Data. And that stuck with us. So the idea is that the whole world is actually working with APIs right now. Everything is just APIs. How people can just integrate APIs into their workflows, and it's all APIs running. APIs are running this world. Like software is eating the world, and APIs are running this world. And we had this bullish view that, you know, we have to be API first, and that's how starting to come to fruition now that people are starting to adopt. And with our sort of platform, you can just plug in your latitude, longitude, and figure out what is the wildfire risk, figure out what are the drought risk, figure out what is the water stress at the certain location or certain region. And that's how, like, any environmental parameter that you are looking to extract for your asset or for your region or for your net zero goals or for any reason, you can just go to our platform, get the API key, put in the latitude, longitude, and get the data and figure out which product you want, actually.
Yeah, I think I like what you're saying, because I feel like somehow the satellite data world is a little too obsessed with maps and pixels and seeing things, which makes sense. You know, it's important to visualize, but that's only good for the first step, you know, to get the attention of somebody. But then if they want to implement it somewhere and integrate it into their, you know, processes for, let's say, automatic monitoring of assets and, you know, getting alerts, you need to build APIs. And slowly the Earth observation world is getting there. You know, I used to work in software. So when I got into the industry and I saw them releasing, you know, APIs as a feature, I was kind of stunned, because, you know, in software, APIs are how things work. You know, it's not a feature. You don't announce that we have APIs. And it seems like one of your biggest, you know, innovations is trying to make everything into an API so that people can access it and integrate it as easily as possible, right? Especially the financial institutions. Is that your biggest kind of innovation?
I think when we started looking at a lot of our customers, you know, people were like, wait, what's your, the world is also like, I think, very obsessed with software and, like, as you said, the visualization part of it, for which we did build Spacetime so that anybody could come and actually visualize everything on Spacetime. In fact, Spacetime is the first sort of client of our APIs. So we are able to do all the mistakes or all of the, like, you know, uptake and all those things with Spacetime. But the thing is, if you look at a large organization, and that's where one of the large theses of Blue Sky as a company also comes in, that we are not really focused on, we don't look at a micro thing. I'm not interested in helping Arvind solve his carbon footprint, because I know that in the larger scheme of things, that's not going to make an ounce of difference. What we are trying to attempt here, and it's a very difficult attempt, and, you know, it's just the, I think, attempt is sometimes in terms of startup, I think one of our early mentors said that at least attempt something which is worth failing, you know. So one of our larger attempts and our thesis is to look at how can we change the whole system? And it's a very complicated, inertial, massive system with all of its complications, right? And if I want everybody in the system to move to a new software, that's going to be a very difficult transition. But all these people in the system, like all the banks and insurances and all the asset managers and all the journalists and every other organization, has their own internal dashboards and softwares and all these, like, fancy things. The thing we felt was that if we can empower and enable and equip those software with the right kind of information so that people can ask right questions and answer those questions, that would be, like, much easy transition. Like, for instance, if I'm trying to change the way, like, one massive bank in the US is doing lending practices, or one asset manager is allocating billions of dollars to oil and not allocating billions of dollars to other climate resilient things, and trying to sell them a software, I don't think that's going to make a difference. But trying to enable, like, you know, their systems with APIs, I think that's where we actually do have a real shot. And, you know, some of the studies say that it's like 90 to 100 companies and banks in the world which actually have most of the carbon footprint, most of the assets in the world. So I think, you know, however difficult it is, like, that B2B key account enterprise, like, massive, you know, $1 billion revenue customer to attain, but that customer is the one who can actually really move the needle on the climate change. So kind of like, you know, moving away from the whole, let's say, woke narrative. And, you know, I think, yes, individuals have a power and have a decision and choice. But individuals have to recognize that we're part of this, like, grand inertial system. And we have to move that system. And that's where we think that APIs can really play a huge role.
With respect to APIs, is that, you know, you might have heard of algorithmic trading. And a lot of decision making in this world right now is actually being done by machines. And the way they are doing is using APIs. I could give you a very fun example. You have this Lemonade app in which for insurance, and all of it is automated. In India, they have this app called Swiggy. It's the largest food delivery app, and all the customer resolution stuff is now automated. There's not a person involved unless you specifically ask for it. And APIs enable all this. Like, going forward, a lot of the decision with respect to climate, like, should this be asset be deployed or not deployed, or how should it be run, would be happening through just data and APIs. Like, the human element will be slowly decreasing, reduced, and will soon be gone in some places as well.
Fair enough, makes sense. I was curious, so what type of data do you use? What is your input source? I'm guessing different types of satellite data. So is it only open data? Do you use commercial data? Do you use other types of data? What are your, you know, what does your technology stack look like today?
I think that's the most common question that anyone has ever asked us. Like, everyone just asks this question, and it's understandably the most obvious one too. We ingest all kinds of data. So when, let's say, we are building a data product, to build one data product, you require multiple data inputs. So we use open data, we use commercial data from public agencies like NASA and ECMWF as well, And we have started to use commercial data because we build our refinery on open data, but now we can as easily use the commercial data that's available. And now we have started to sign up LOIs and agreements with large commercial providers whose satellites are going to go up in 2023, 2024, so that we have new data sets coming in so that we can deploy them on the data sets that are on our roadmap. So all kinds of data, satellite data, a lot of satellite data, terabytes of satellite data, but also a lot of other data from the partnerships that we have. So let's say if you want to figure out what is the groundwater level or lake surface water quantification, then we partner with, let's say, an NGO, a nonprofit, or an asset manager, or maybe sometimes even government to have that IoT data into our system as well. And let's say for carbon sequestration, we are partnering with some companies, carbon developers, to figure out the carbon stock on ground, like on ground measurements. So it's a lot of satellite data,
yeah.
But complementary to that, there's like lots of ground truthing as well.
I think what I will add to this is that what's happened in the last 3-4 years is that we're launching lots and lots of satellites. We are making satellites smaller and smaller. But the question that we at Blue Sky have been really focusing on answering is sort of like this bridging the bridge, like, you know, bridging this gap. So there is satellite data and there's lots of places where you can use the satellite data. And then we think that primary focus for us is climate and environment. So what are the questions that can be answered from that satellite data in this world? And let's come from both sides and let's meet in the middle about what are the possibilities, right? So a large part of the puzzle we are trying to solve is building these data sets on free or open data, which is available with NASA or ESA or, you know, even ISRO, to be able to get like, okay, this is the flood map of this place. But then this current resolution is 5 km² resolution, which is not good enough. Now I want to take this resolution up to, let's say, 50 cm or, you know, 10 cm. And then I'm going back to the private guys. It's like, hey, what satellite data do you have? What is your data? What sensors do you have? So we've done conversations with more than, I would say, 30 different private satellite folks at different stages. Some guys are capitalized 500K, some guys are capitalized 200 million. And we have really gone through everyone's sensors to be able to get a sense on where can we use, maximize the usage and, like, you know, utility and mining of the sensors that you have, the data that you're already generating, the money and the hardware you've already put in the place for the benefit of the planet and the users and the customers downstream. Because what's the utility? Like, if you have all these satellites up in the orbit and then it's only going to defense and it's not actually being put into other different use cases and not serving a purpose, then it's just a very inefficient deployment. And I think one of the largest problems that I feel with climate is that we are very obsessed with production and we are not at all obsessed or not at all focused on utilization. So in the world of satellite data or satellites in the space market, we're very obsessed with launching satellites up in the orbit. But nobody is thinking that, okay, somebody has to make sense of that data, and it's not as easy. Like, you know, the number of times I've been in a VC meeting and they've been like, yeah, but you don't have any proprietary data. And I'm going like, do you realize there's like a glut of data that's coming down? There's going to be petabytes of data, and you need people like me to make basic queries and basic models and basic common sense of that data. And then we're already putting up much more advanced models of like flood or wildfire. So the hardware companies, and, you know, this thesis that hardware companies will tomorrow make softwares or make models, it's going to be extremely complicated for them to pivot their entire company in one day. A hardware versus a software company has a very different genetics, a very different focus. And we really focus on utilization. It would be really sad if we have these petabytes of information and still don't know, you know, in real time how much deforestation is happening in our most important forest. I think it will be really sad. For a lot of these questions, you can actually find answers even today from even the existing data sets, and we don't have. So, you know, the question really becomes that we're launching all these satellites, there'll be all this data, which will be going to all the cloud and consuming energy. Are we utilizing, are we doing, you know, maximum utilization of that particular data?
Yeah, no, 100%. I absolutely agree with everything that you've said, because if you've read any of what I've written or, you know, talked about, it's basically what I've been screaming about is the world is obsessed with launch, and you know, not very few people are actually thinking about, you know, not even 10% of who are obsessed with building and launching are obsessed with, you know, using and adopting that data, making use of that data. And I like the way you put it, production versus utilization. So that's basically the state of the industry. But one thing that, you know, makes me curious is, what is your response to folks who ask you don't have any proprietary data? Because at the end, you know, there is going to be a data asymmetry, because there are some companies who are trying to go, you know, vertically integrate themselves and trying to build software. And I have been in one, but you know, it came from another direction, interestingly. And it's the only case study in the world that goes the other way at tomorrow.io, that was a software company that's launching satellites. But every other company is going in the opposite direction. And of course, it's incredibly hard, because you've been building, you know, you're full of engineers and scientists, and you know, you're not software engineers and you don't have a software mindset. So it's incredibly hard. But, you know, they are going in that direction. So what is your response to, you know, that question, that big question that you mentioned?
Yeah. More than building software, I think the biggest question is, let's say there are 30 companies which are launching all sorts of satellites, right? They haven't talked to the customers. They don't know what the customers want. And honestly, all we do is talk to customers, and we know where customers stand. In many cases, we as a company have literally sent Excel sheets on emails and then raised invoice. So we know what's the state of customers in terms of like climate, in terms of like, you know, data, in terms of like satellites. And we have been bridging that gap, like really understanding what are going to be the numbers which are going to matter most to you, and building models onto it. So this whole proprietary thing, there are two parts to it. One is that people don't have an understanding of how incredibly hard it is. It is incredibly hard to query a planet and petabytes of data. So any company which is going to attempt going downstream in the software direction would essentially need a lot of data infrastructure that Blue Sky has built, which we've been thinking of even SaaSifying some of the data infrastructure to make it easy for you to just simply distribute and process your own data. Because that software piece is actually incredibly hard, and you have to build it. The second thing becomes that we honestly don't have that much time as a planet. Like, we really think that, you know, we have next 100 years to do all these innovations, that 100 companies which are launching satellites are going to go vertical. We have to be extremely collaborative onto this. The companies which are in the hardware space, they're good in that. They should stay there. If they were not there, you know, everybody has a role to play. And a company like us has a role in the downstream. I think my goal really as a founder is that if there is a SAR satellite up in the orbit, which is taking images of any flooding scenario, I want that information to be with all the different users who can use that information next day or in a few hours. Currently, the lag in the industry is 5 years, it's 10 years, it's never. And I mean, if all the hardware companies do want to build that software, it's going to take time. You know, it's going to, forget money, it's still going to take them time. And do we as a planet have that time? The question is, do we as a planet have that time? We don't. We've run out of time as a planet already. So it's extremely important for every company in this space to be collaborative and pick up our part of the puzzle and, you know, attempt the problem together.
I think not just from a perspective from the time that people like the Earth has, but also from a financial perspective, like a software company which is already ingesting data and serving customers has a much more robust business model and understanding than a company which is launching satellites and hasn't. A satellite company knows that, you know, this is the broad sector, but they don't know the exact parameters, exact tolerance that the client requires. And actually, that's one thing that we really appreciate about tomorrow.io. And there's another company that we talked to in our AWS Space Accelerator that was using a lot of satellite data. And now they've figured out that there's nobody out there which can serve them as an input data set. And now they're launching their own satellite. As I think the similar thing happened at Tomorrow. And I think that's a more smarter approach, rather than going, we will launch the satellites first, and then get the satellite data, and then talk to our customers, and then build software and data on it. And the simplest answer to that question, that you have proprietary data. Proprietary data is not data is the new oil, but we have proprietary models. That's the big thing. You might have proprietary data, but the data is getting commoditized, and now proprietary models is what counts.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And you know what I like about what you're building is it's something that I've always advocated for when these companies go downstream, but they only go downstream with their own data sources. They don't even, you know, try and see what other data sources are available. So, you know, you cannot solve a problem unless you have an objective, holistic approach, which I feel like it's what you are going for. You know, you are holistic, you know, you don't prioritize or prefer a specific data set. Like you mentioned, you know, if you require to work with NGOs to get a type of data, you do it. And, you know, that's the way that you need to do in order to build a better product, right? Because at the end of the day, the customer, he's, you know, is probably going to, you know, they're going to probably use the API, get a value, and they don't know where that data comes from. And weather is the biggest example that I always give is you get a weather alert. You don't even know what satellite or if satellites enable that. Maybe satellites enabled that, maybe they didn't. And people can't even name a type of weather satellite today. And that's the kind of goal for satellite data world. The best case scenario, that's how it looks like, right? Like you get a flood alert or you get a wildfire alert or anything. You get you know, data regarding offset of carbon. You don't care where it came from. Of course, you need to look into the methodology of if it was done properly or emissions. More very important to look into the methodology, but you don't care where the source is. So yeah, that's the best case scenario, in my opinion, for where the industries should go to.
I think I'll also give like a parallel with the oil industry. Everything around us right now has come from oil, like our clothing, our earphones, like, you know, our gas power, everything. But nobody goes like, oh, this has come from the Shell oil field in like, you know, Netherlands or in Kenya or in Venezuela. Where did your oil come? You don't know. The oil goes, it goes to the refineries. It gets refined. Even after going from refinery, nobody knows that, you know, it's come from the Reliance refinery in Jamnagar. At the end of the day, you care about, you know, that my car is running or I'm wearing like glasses which are made of plastic. I think that's going to be the same thing with data. And this kind of like over verticalization ambition that certain investors or certain VCs have is I think it's very unfounded. I've been in some conversations recently where people are like, yeah, but you don't have proprietary data. And I think it's very important. And I'm just being like, well, sir, I completely disagree and nothing else. It's like, well, you are building a data play and I am much more bullish on SaaS. And I'm like, well, sir, I completely disagree. Because at the end of the day, I think these debates, we have to look at the problems that we have. And, the, you know, more than customer at Blue Sky, we really put Earth as the biggest stakeholder. So we have to think about how do we get information about the planet fastest to all the people. And that's the goal. And if that requires us to focus on one piece of just refining and modeling and everybody else doing their job, I think, you know, that's how the entire world and human civilization has worked.
I think there's a bit more caveat to satellite companies as well. Like, not all satellite companies are created equal and are developing equally. I think a lot of satellite companies are just going out there, raising funds and contracting out the satellites. And that's not if they are building some proprietary in-house patented sensors, then that's really a mode that they can defend. But if you're just contracting out the satellite, then any analytical company which already has a business model can just go out to somewhere, contract out a satellite and launch it. And people are doing that. So like, if you don't have a proprietary thing with respect to sensors, you really can't say you have a proprietary data as well. But just because you own the satellite doesn't mean it's proprietary data.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the last question that I'll ask before I'll move on to the next part is, would you launch your own satellites at some point? Would you get fed up of what the data providers are providing in terms of their licensing? You know, that's a whole different conversation in terms of licensing, how hard it is to obtain, you know, how not interoperable it is, how hard it is to use and fuse all those types of data. So that's a completely different conversation. But would you launch your own satellites at some point? Because, you know, it is possible.
I think one of the innovations that, you know, Shidhij has really driven is that taking data from disparate sources and fusing and using it together. So I think that last piece that you said, how hard it is, we've cracked that hard question where we can take SAR data or hyperspectral data from different satellites at different resolution and still bring it together to be able to stitch it and get information about the questions that we are asking. So that's sort of the core of our innovation. And that's where where we feel that, you know, for all the other upstream companies, we would be a very worthy and valuable partner. I think our focus on planet and that questions like, you know, we're not like in the business and don't want to ever get in the business of counting cars for hedge funds to, for them to generate an alpha or something. We really are in the business of sort of risk and compliance of all the things around the planet. And every single, you know, at the end of the day, it becomes very P2P partnership, like all the business, however complicated, however tech, goes down to the founders and people and human beings. And in all of our conversations, we feel that, you know, we would be best partnered to the upstream industry with our refining and modeling capabilities rather than going, you know, launching our own satellites or something. And then, you know, honestly, as an environmentalist and with the business on environment, I would be very sad if I end up becoming a source of space pollution myself. I think that's a huge danger that we as community and planet are walking on. I think there are more than enough satellites already. And there's more than enough launches coming already. So if I can even lay my hands on 10% of the data that'll come downstream, I'll be able to answer all the questions we need to answer. You know, that's, yeah.
Fair enough. No, I was asking because, you know, there's an Indian company that kind of went or is going in the direction, Satshur. You know, they started out as an analytics company. They have kind of a different thesis, perhaps not the same thesis as yours, but then they decided to build their own satellites and they're going to build it. So, you know, I was curious if there's going to be another one of those.
I think if you find a niche use case, I think that's something that you should really do. But we somehow feel, according with respect to our product roadmap, really like there's a lot of satellite data that's out there, and a lot of good companies that are upcoming and focusing on satellites and data. There's this company that we were talking about, and they told me that we will not price our data per acre or per square kilometer. They will just price as per your use. So they take like 10% of whatever sort of you get out of the product that you build, because they want to unlock the value in the data rather than, you know, just price everyone out. So I think if there's a very unique need and there's no satellite out there, which is highly improbable, then we would go for it. But I would say no as of right now for next 2 years.
That's good. Cool. Let's move on to your business model. So how does it work? So you said you're an API first company. So is that an API driven business model in terms of number of calls? And, you know, can you look at scaling it? Because one of the discussions, especially in the last couple of weeks, has been or can satellite data companies be SaaS companies? Well, in my opinion, they can't be because the industry is not there yet. And, you know, it's still custom projects and kind of customization. SaaS is like 95% no customization. You can basically resell your product to different customers and, you know, there is no customer acquisition cost. But the way the industry is today, it's probably not possible. But have you cracked that in terms of your API first approach?
I think we haven't cracked SaaS, and we don't, like, if we ever go SaaS, that would be for the satellite industry.
Let's say subscription based, you know, recurring revenue.
Yeah, so the subscription base, like, you know, we really focus on a sort of intelligence. And if you go in the intelligence market, the better comparables to a company like Blue Sky Analytics would be companies like MSCI or IHS Market or Fitch Ratings or Moody's or even Bloomberg or Refinitiv. And a lot of these companies have huge intelligence, and they provide this intelligence to various kinds of customers in a repeatable contract manner. So very rarely do contracts get canceled, especially if you're delivering value and good client management and good account management, good client service. That really becomes the key to it. In most cases, your contracts or your engagements just increase in size and volume, because we are just starting on the whole journey of climate. For instance, you know, Freddie Mac, and I think just hired a head of climate risk. So prior to this, many organizations which face climate risk didn't even have a person interfacing who a company like Blue Sky Analytics would go and talk to. So I think what we are cracking and we're focused on cracking is helping our clients answer key questions related to their business, their risk, their compliance on a year-on-year basis. And that answering, we will be, you know, as of now, we are doing through Excels, PDFs, APIs, whatever works. But over time, I think we will be able to help and educate our customers really so that, you know, the customization piece is on the querying our APIs piece. And they're able to do that themselves, or we're able to sort of do some hand holding of that. But it's not so much of like us building a custom data set for them. I think. Well, that's another good thing about the whole world of the planetary science. There are not that many custom database, like data sets. When you look at Earth, there are few data sets that matter. And then it's not like, you know, it's not a human being. So it doesn't have these whims and fancies. So the you can't create a data set of like, what's the mascara demand of Earth? Earth is quite a fixed, you know, entity in itself. So that's one part. The second thing that we are really focusing is some of the repeatable use cases and expanding on those repeatable use cases. So definitely the discussion in the industry over the last week has been great. I think this industry, the Earth observation industry and the climate industry both, are going to be a mix of project product kind of approach, because at the end of the day, we are all tied to the final purpose, which is that what's happening on the side of climate, right? Nothing else matters. So within this industry, this sort of like, you know, a hyper SaaS, put in $100 million, take it to 300 million customer, that's never going to work, because it really isn't applicable. What is going to work is really strategic investments, really strategic alliances, really strategic sort of conversations with the customers and focusing on some use cases. The use case I really like, you know, and at Blue Sky we're focusing in on, is really on the carbon markets, but not really going vertical. We don't want to have our own carbon farms, nothing. We really want to help all the people in this market with as much information as possible. So even when it's Verra or Gold Standard, who are the current like sort of auditors, we want to be supplementing them. If it's a carbon developer who may not be able to afford it, we want to figure out a pricing in which you don't even have to buy it. You can just get that information. I'm very bullish on climate risk as a market, extremely bullish on that, I think, where my thesis have been constantly sort of just, you know, and it's been a long journey. In 2017, climate risk was not even a term, and now it is. I'm actually coming almost full circle presenting with RBI and doing a workshop on climate risk for Indian banks. So I think where our vision is that climate risk and climate stress testing, some of those pieces will be very sort of consistent use cases,
yep,
which will be of a very exactly repeatable nature. I think I heard that from Ray itself from Tomorrow, which is like, this business is actually about balancing the whole projectizing the products and productizing the projects.
Yeah,
so exactly. It's really about balancing that. So what right now we are doing is, because we are a small company and, you know, we have to serve the customers and that comes first, like the whole experience. So we are projectizing certain products so that we can have that engagement and learn from that engagement before going into like this like mad, like, you know, need to have this growth or whatever.
Yeah.
Once we have done that part of like projectizing our products well, we will go back to productizing these projects. So it's going to be that balance, I think.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because, you know, the industry, very few in the industry are open to accepting that. You know, they want to, you know, kind of, it's almost like the industry is SaaS, but not SaaS, and they want to pretend to be SaaS. So I appreciate you kind of admitting that this is how the industry is, and that's how it is, you know, that's the reality. And I also like that you see the end goal, right? We can see an end goal. There will be an end goal, because it's impossible that there will not be any synergies or patterns. Of course, there's going to be patterns, because at least geographically, let's not, maybe not globally, but even geographically, I can imagine like the whole of India is probably going to need the same type of data in the similar format, or the whole of Europe, or the whole of the US, maybe global as well. But it's good to have an end goal, but also appreciate where we are today.
I think, you know, what's happened with Descartes Lab, you know, sort of bringing out the elephant in the room, is like one of the saddest thing. And it's a absolute underappreciation of the rigor and research and hard work of founders and technology by the overall investment industry. I think, you know, hyper investment, like I think Descartes Lab could have been a NASDAQ stock and I would have personally bought that stock, and they were doing 17 million ARR. A lot of people would have, right? And they could have increased revenue. They could have been a consulting-ish tech, high-tech consulting-ish firm which is a stock on NASDAQ, and a lot of people would have bought it for that. And they could have found out a journey in which there would have been like some top 3-4 products by Descartes Lab, followed by a series of projects, and it would have been like a great value creation. What's happened right now is essentially just like value dilution, because and I think, you know, he also mentioned in his article as well in his blog that when you kick out the founders 2 years before, the people who've been since the day one and understand all of these nitty-gritties of SaaS project product beyond the sort of like, you know, the top level terminology that VC associates understand, you're really doing a huge disfavor to the stockholder and the shareholder. I'm very bullish on, I think, tomorrow, because the fundamentals are really there, and it could become a business which would have some projects but also some products, and those product pipelines could go in a SaaS manner, and the projects also bring their own like value, right? Like, I mean, McKinsey, BCG, Bain are all project companies minting billions of dollars, right?
I think I can see a parallel to how the launch industry works. I'm really fascinated by space launches, and you can see how ride sharing and piggyback launches work. There's this large satellite that's going up, and there's like hundreds of other satellites that's piggybacking that launch. And I think we internally have sort of figured this out similarly. Like, we have this massive client on this massive data set, but there are smaller clients which can't pay as much. Like, they can't pay like 100K or 500K, but they can pay 10K or like 50K and get the similar data set. And I think that unleashes the value and lets people use that data, like, which would they would never be able to afford. Let's say if you were like productizing and SaaSifying this wouldn't work for $1 million client. Like, that's not a thing that you can do. And that's what the Descartes Lab article told us about, like, that repeatable $1 million business is not doable. But that repeatable 10K, $10,000 business is not just doable, it is very essential. Like, that should be done, because that enables the diversity of the ecosystem that a lot of other people can sort of go and build these, use these data sets, which they would never otherwise be able to if, let's say, we were only doing consulting and serving just 10 clients. Like, we have been talking to these smaller clients, these carbon developers, which can't pay that much. Like, they can't pay as much like as a someone who would pay for consulting, but they still want that data. They still deliver value to the larger world. So I think SaaSifying is like a approach that you should strive for. It's not a very business model wise, it's not a very.
I think a lot of these terms are too reductive. I think SaaSifying, consulting, I think it's very reductive. And that obsession with them, these words, is very reductive. Like, you have to really look at what is a problem, what are you trying to solve here, and what is the best way to solve that problem, and while doing that in a sustainable fashion. You know, like in the beginning, like, you know, the jargon that we were completely boxed in was like, wait, you want to do environment, but I've never heard of a startup making money from environment, so you should be a nonprofit. And I was just like, no, I want to create a sustainable organization. I want to be like, I'm working towards sustainability. And what does it talk about sustainability if my own organization is not financially sustainable? Like, that's just a hypocritical statement, right? But that was coming from these like mindsets of people where there are like these buckets which don't actually exist, right? I think that same thing in the whole SaaS or the customer industries. When you look at any client, if you yourself are going and spending $1,000 somewhere, you want more than SaaS. You want more than just the product. You want that service. You want to be able to pick up the call and, you know, talk about something. I mean, even for a very SaaS product, like, let's say, you know, the products that we use within Blue Sky, when there's a bug, we go and bug the CEO, right? Yeah. So even like for $100 purchase, I as a customer feel entitled that I should get the best service, and I'm going and bugging the CEO. Like, why do we presume that for $1 million contract, the customers will just be like, oh yeah, I've got it and I've paid for it, but if I want to ask any question or I want any consulting, like, that just comes with it. So having a more broader view onto this market in terms of the needs of the customer is very important. And the best part, which Shudit said, you know, if you do only consulting, you really miss out this opportunity to be able to help so many other people who can then further save the planet. So, you know, yes, $1 million consulting project followed by $20,000, like, you know, sort of SaaS product, SaaS clients, but those SaaS clients also have a huge impact onto the larger problem that we are trying to solve.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. And, you know, I recently I wrote about something called an impact-driven strategy, and that's what we should be having. We should not focus on, are we selling data? Are we selling analytics? Are we selling insights? Are we selling it on scale, etc.? It's more starting with what the impact of the product is for the customer, starting there, and then building a product based on that. Because, as you mentioned, the model will kind of figure out itself, like you mentioned, because you probably will find one big customer and 5-10 small customers, and at the end, you can still have an impact that's, you know, you still plan for. So it makes sense. Cool. We're nearing the end of the conversation, but I want to talk about being in India. The challenge was the opportunity, because I've heard both sides of the argument, and, you know, the opportunity, I kind of edge towards the opportunity side coming from India. But what is your outlook? And, well, first, is your team based in India? Where's your offices? And then talk about what the challenges or opportunities of being in India are.
So we're a globally remote team. We do have a small office, but, like, you know, most of our people are remote everywhere in India, in the world. And I think I really take pride in the fact that, you know, we have extremely intelligent, high-tech scientists, data scientists, remote sensing engineers, data engineers working out of, like, Silchar, Assam, or out of, like, Kasargod in Kerala. So not even, like, tier two or three towns, but, like, really, like, small towns are out of Mangalore. They've got great internet. They log in at like 9, 10 a.m. onto their systems. They work on their laptops. They're working towards something which is extremely meaningful, but also extremely technically complicated and challenging. So this is not like a simple, like, you know, building a CRM or building a, you know, dating app business. It's a complicated business. And this opportunity that we're able to provide to so many Indians to be part of such a complicated, like, you know, question. It's fun, you know, like, one of the most fundamental things as science students, like, which all of us have been, is that there is a fun in solving a difficult mathematical problem, apart from, you know, the answer also. And I think we as a country had denied a lot of our brilliant people that opportunity for a long time by just giving them these, like, really easy or simple, like, you know, questions. Like, India produces 25% of global STEM graduates, I think, you know. This everybody in the world, every VC, every investor, every founder in the world should be extremely bullish about Indian capital, Indian human capital in a downstream space business or in a downstream AI driven, like, you know, very sort of cutting edge tech business, because you've got the people, and in tech, people are all that matter. So that's the first part. There are definitely some challenges of being in India because of, I think, generally our own underestimation of our own skills and talent. So it's just like, you know, the number of times I've heard that, you know, you should have built a business like this in California, or, you know, it makes no sense. If you think about something, you know, just in terms of capital efficiency, if, let's say, Blue Sky is trying to raise $10 million, that's equivalent to $40 to $50 million round in California, right? So if you think about in terms of even, let's say, Descartes Lab, which has raised about $200 million and was doing $17 million ARR, in India, they would have raised $20 million and done $17 million ARR. That would have been completely different cost dynamics, and that would have been a billion-dollar company, right? So that efficiency that you get out of being in India is incredible. And I think there's another second part. We always think about moving everybody to, like, you know, all the intelligent people should move to US or France or whatever to work, like, including me. Every time it's like, hey, why don't you move to California? If I were living in California, my carbon footprint would be 10 to 20 times of what it is today. Even with a more splurgy lifestyle in India, right? So I think rethinking that, what can we do to be able to create that value with these kinds of advantages that we have? Obviously, there are some challenges, and there are challenges everywhere. But I think India has to take a huge lead in climate. It has to be extremely bullish in climate. Like, the next 20 years are extremely important for the entire planet's survivability. And as one of the oldest civilizations in the world, as one of the highest populations in the world, like, we can no longer be just ignorant, like, oh yeah, like, you know, US is going to lead on climate and we're going to do something about it. We have to really find our own place in the narrative, in technology, in intelligence, in data, and start to take a little leadership position. And we have the people. I think average age of India is 29. So we have, like, every other country in the world, including Japan, Netherlands, France, US, has a dearth of tech talent, and we have an abundance of tech talent. Let's put that to work. Sure. And let's do utilization of those people, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And also, I think there's the angle of, you know, leadership also from, you know, from for a global agenda, right? It's always not about just being a follower, but also having an impact. And I think it's important because, and I've heard this from discussions, for example, with Satcher, I've had them on the podcast and I've talked to them several times, is, you know, those companies who are building for the West, they are probably not building for, you know, the other market. So because you're based in India, what you're building for, let's say the developing world, is going to be very scalable across the developing world. And that is a market that the Western world cannot get to because they have built products that are very oriented towards the West, right? So there's also the commercial angle to it for being based in India. Yeah.
I think in terms of Planet and Climate, and, you know, this is a huge market creation. Like, you know, we are in a space in which there are very few people in the space, and everybody in the space has been there for like, what, 5-6 years or something. So we don't really even differentiate between the developed or developing world in that sense. And a lot of focus at Blue Sky is really latitude, longitude, and time. Our product is called Space Time, so it's like space and time. So, you know, a latitude, longitude, a pixel in the US versus a pixel in Africa versus a pixel in India. We don't really differentiate between those three pixels. Like, for sure, the paying capacity of the customers in these places might be different. But our goal is to get the information about these pixels to all the right people. Yeah.
Got it. So what's next? What's coming up for Blue Sky? What's on your roadmap? Are you fundraising? Are you developing new products? What's coming up?
We are fundraising. I think every founder is always fundraising. That is like the reality of life. We're building new data products. Like, we finally wrapped out a lot of products around wildfires, finished the packaging. Wildfire somehow automatically, like, just as an organic journey, took us to both the carbon markets and carbon footprint, carbon sequestration markets, and to the drought market. It just happened sort of automatically. We wanted to make our wildfire models more accurate, so we reached the droughts, and we wanted to, as we were looking already into the forest, we were like, well, let's also do carbon stock measurements and things like that. And I think the nature, this organic nature of this journey, and these querying and the development of these data products itself sort of is really good, because if you're not trying to, like, you know, sort of create a data product like for the sake of it, it's a question that in our own curiosity we are answering, right? And that's how it also reflects to the customer, because the customer is also asking a lot of questions. The whole role of data is to help you answer questions. So I think in the next couple of years, we would really have a lot of these data products completely well packaged. You know, till last year, we didn't even have a segment on our website about the application of the industries, because we were still doing conversations with those industries. So we weren't sure about the application for electric utilities or for the insurance sector. We had a little hunch, but we did not really have a complete definitive sort of answer or approach onto this. Now we have that. I think the other thing we're really focusing on is closing some of our customers. They're very big, very terrifying customers. We're a small startup. So that's where we're looking for kind of like the ecosystem to support us in a way, so that, you know, I think it'll be like a really big personal achievement if, like, you know, Blue Sky Analytics could serve some of the largest banks and asset managers. Like, this, like, small 30 people company out of India can do that. I think that'll be really exciting. And we're very close to doing that. And that's where we're also, like, recapitalizing. Mostly, you know, I think most of our proceed of funds is for just being able to provide the excellent client service to our clients. That's the goal, right? Like, you know, I really want to have these clients in perpetuity if you're doing so much hard work to get them. So that's the roadmap. And we are also extensively hiring, because I know a lot of your podcasts would be heard by people on the sort of human capital side of things. And also it's a role around, you know, we've talked about selling, and the nature of our business is a little consultative selling. It is not the most cookie cutter selling. So we need very brilliant people very sort of brilliant people in the data team, into the climate team, into the climate risk team. You know, people in the banking and the financial sector are all quite intelligent people. I think the best part of working at Blue Sky for both of us has been that we've learned so much, because we always end up meeting all these ridiculously brilliant people. You know, you're meeting like head of an asset manager, head of sustainable investing of a $8 trillion like AUM. You're like, wow, like the breadth and expanse of knowledge and organization and management that you've done is amazing. So if I can play a small role in making your life easy, I think that's what we really want to strive for.
Sounds good. One question that I want to ask, or I always ask when startups come on the podcast, is in 5 years' time, what do you want Blue Sky to be known for or known as? I think we've discussed that, but seems like there is already a hint of an answer.
I think the go-to climate intelligence guys, like I really want that in 5 years when even a student, you know, in a university in the world has a question around climate change or climate, they log on Spacetime and they make an account and they take a free like sort of student subscription and they run some queries. Like that would be the ultimate goal, that, you know, become that dependable and reliable that people trust us with that information. And this is information about our habitability on this planet that we're talking about. So we do take that role very seriously as well.
Cool. So related to that, if you had a magic wand, for both of you, it can be a technical thing or something else. If you had a magic wand and you want to say change something in the industry overnight, what would that be? Could be from a data source, just data become so cheap and easily accessible, fusible, from a satellite data perspective, or, you know, it can be from a commercial, whatever.
I think they should make all the satellite data, I think they should make all the satellite data open source if you're developing. And when there's a business model figured out, you should do a revenue share, because that would benefit you a lot and everyone else a lot.
Yeah, I think everyone is in the... I think if I had a magic wand around it... I would want people to have a little more, read a little more about these slightly more complicated topics before forming their extremely confident opinions, which we have in the industry, especially the, you know, like the founders, the developers, the scientists. Like, you know, if you go and talk to Charlie Trimble or you talk to, I forgot the name of the guy who runs SSTL, he's a brilliant guy. You talk to... he's an anointed sir, but if you talk to Charlie Trimble versus you talk to any VC in the industry, there's a huge difference. Martin, yes, so there's a huge difference of opinion, and I think it's almost like disrespectful to not head to the words of like people like Charlie Trimble, who've been in this industry for like what, 30 years, trying to make an industry what it is not is disrespectful to that industry, you know. And I think climate, there's too much bullishness happening in climate, in which the climate VCs are also not really holding themselves accountable to their mission and their purpose. And that's similar thing a little bit in the space industry also. Like, we're not B2C apps. We're not B2C apps, so there is no point trying to feign or trying to become those B2C app, ecosystem. Like, it's a different ecosystem. And, I think this ecosystem can learn a lot by being more closer to the climate scientist, by being more closer to the space scientist.
Yep.
And ironically, sometimes the ecosystem distances them away. It's like, we have more... more MBAs and BCG Bains into this ecosystem than like climate scientists and the space scientists. And that's slightly ironical. So if I had a magic wand, I would bring more climate scientists and more space scientists into this ecosystem.
Fair enough, makes sense. And you know, that's kind of what I try and do with the podcast, is not in the newsletter, whatever I do on social media is also to, you know, talk about the nuances, because this market is nuanced. You know, you cannot be a software VC, invest into any company that is in this Earth observation world and expect similar returns. Part of it is default in terms of not communicating what they are, or sometimes, you know, calling themselves SaaS when they're not SaaS, you know, things like that. So there's partially fault on the industry side, but there's also fault on their side that either they don't look into and deep dive into what's happening in the industry, or they just don't understand it because, you know, they are not climate scientists or they are not coming from a technical background.
And that problem is even worse in the climate industry. It's like even worse, where there's like mindless investments into mindless ideas without any rooting in climate and without, you know, you have, I think one thing that climate change as a problem should do is humble us. And it's doing opposite of that. Like the climate investing world and the climate tech world is doing opposite of that humility, because, you know, like there is billions of dollars that we are throwing into, and we are feeling proud about those investments, which are not going to make an ounce of
an impact,
solution.
Yeah.
It's not going to make an ounce of an impact. So, you know, like we have to hold ourselves accountable to some of the realities of the world in both the climate and space industry. And that would be really good if we're able to achieve that.
Sounds good. So last question, let's end on an optimistic note. What are you optimistic about?
I am thinking, actually, I think it's a lot of people would see this as very pessimistic. But I think the correction that's happening right now is going to help companies with right fundamentals a lot. Because it shatters the hypothesis that a lot of people have made. And I think it's a reality check that the world is giving itself. Yeah. I mean, it's a pessimistic thing to live through, but it's optimistic in a sense that the real gems, and we don't know if we are one of them, but maybe hopefully we are one. But I think at the end of this, a lot of good companies would precipitate.
Sounds good.
I think that's true. I'm very optimistic about the companies with the right fundamentals. I think there's great technology that's happening right now amidst all the froth, even on the climate side of things. Like, you know, the amount of investing and just climate tech VC, these words precipitating right in front of my eyes, like they were not there 5 years ago. And I actually remember,
3 years ago.
Yeah, they were not there 3 years ago. I remember having a conversation about, like, you know, potentially opening a climate tech VC with my boss back in like 2017. And I was like, that's not going to happen. Like, nobody is going to invest into this sort of climate thesis, and that's happening. And there's so much capital pouring in. So that is something I'm extremely optimistic about. And that kind of makes me very optimistic about Blue Sky also, because we've got our thesis corrected right through thesis checked so many times in the last 3 years. It's like, really, it's very good. It's like, you know, we theorized this 3 years later, ABCDEFG, they confirmed that this thesis is correct. So I think that, like, really brings the optimism that there is a hope that we will be able to figure out some solutions, some adaptation, mitigation around climate change.
All right, sounds good. Anything else that you want to add before we close? I think we covered quite a lot of things. Going to be a loaded conversation listening for the listeners, but anything else you want to add?
Yeah,
I want you to do the next podcast with Mark Johnson. I really want to hear that, like yeah. really want
to
hear
I'd
that
love to hear
yeah
that.
Sure, yeah, I think that's a
that
good idea.
My note,
yeah, I'm probably gonna have him on the podcast sometime. I think when he's ready to talk. I think he's talked enough already. I think we're trying to process everything in the last couple of weeks, so I think I'm going to, you know, process that a little bit, you know, and then ask the right questions.
So, I would actually personally read. I'm not a big book reader, but if he published a book about Descartes last year, I would read it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when the blog ended, I wanted to read more.
Yeah.
I think it's so weird, you know, like I've never met him, but and I've only seen the company from far. And I think there is an emotionality that I found myself having for the company that
this resonates.
Yeah, like I was so sad about it. It was like surprisingly that this is like impacting me so much emotionally, as if it's a friend's startup or it's like, you know, like somebody who I really knew or like. So I think the fact that we have this kind of, like, you know, basic human emotions around like respect for people, you know, but I just think that they would come back stronger.
Yeah, no, I know. You know, really the, you know, the for those who don't know, you know, the company is not dead. It's been acquired by a private equity firm. So, you know, one faint hope that I have is just the one faint hope is, you know, they're probably going to correct in terms of how the company views itself commercially. The likelihood of that happening, we'll see. But if they correct, you know, from a commercial point of view, I think that's going to be good news for the industry, you know, if they figure out a model that works, because, you know, if they are the most capable ones of figuring out a commercial model, if they, you know, put in the right effort into understanding the market. So, you know, the faint hope that I have is if they were to, you know, course correct the company and fix their commercials, that's going to be great news for the industry. You know, there's going to be plenty of followers of what they're trying to do. So hopefully that's kind of
I think what this spurred automatically, like already, like, you know, by their first movement, what they have already spurred in the overall industry across the world, I think they should really pat themselves on the back for that, because, you know,
I think they are inspiration.
They are inspiration, right?
Like, no matter what happens to Descartes Labs, I think they are an inspiration to a lot of companies.
And this has happened for everybody,
like,
right?
A lot of companies have come up by reading their blogs,
yeah.
by reading their stories, like 4, 5, 6
sure.
years ago.
Yeah. So, I think, and this has happened in every industry, I think this is something which the industry shouldn't even take as a negative, but as a big positive. Like, if you look at internet search, if you look at cars, if you look at electric cars, multiple people tried. We look at solar cells. Like, you know, I used to do solar cell research back in 2010, and so many groups across the world were trying, and then so many failed, and then one succeeded. And that's the journey of, like, you know, human, you know, sort of, like, innovation. We all try, and sometimes the first people who tried, they don't succeed so much.
All right.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I think that brings us to the end. Thanks for being on the podcast, Abhilash and Siti. This was a fun conversation. I mean, it ran over time, but this was a lot of fun and very insightful, I guess.
This was really nice. It was very emotional also in the end.
I think that's, you know, the future of the industry is something to be optimistic about, I guess, because we are so connected to companies like Descartes. Brilliant. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, this is Arvind again. Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the TerraWatt Space podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Also, feel free to sign up for my newsletter, TerraWatch on Substack. That is terrawatch.substack.com, where I attempt to decode the recent developments in space tech and its impact on Earth. Thanks again, and hope to see you for the next episode.